If I had a Desert Island Discs kind of situation and had to choose which passages from the Bible I'd like to take with me, I'm certain I'd want to include the story we hear in today's Gospel reading. It must be the best loved of all the parables that Jesus told. It's been described as one of the best short stories ever told and has inspired artists of every kind. Rembrandt drew it, Debussy wrote music about it, Maisfield wrote a poem based on it, there've even been a ballet version. I'd go along with Robert Bridges, who called it a perfectly flawless piece of work. But the question we have to ask about a parable is not whether it's a good one, but why Jesus told it. And what Luke seems to want us to understand is that he told it in the context of being under attack for the way he lived his life in company with what Luke calls tax collectors and sinners. Just before this story, we have an account of how he's criticised for welcoming sinners and eating with them. In response, he tells the story of the lost sheep and the lost coin, and how there is rejoicing over the lost being found. Then follows this story to cap it all. In that context, we can see that the most important person in the story is not the younger son who runs away, but the elder one who stays at home. This is what's different from the other two stories about the lost being found. When the shepherd finds the sheep, he calls people together to rejoice, and as far as we know, they do. In the story of the lost coin, the woman's friends come and share her joy. But in this story, there's a dissentient voice, a moaner, a complainer, a party pooper, the elder brother. There can be little doubt who it was that Jesus saw in this role. It was the people who were so anxious to criticise him, the Pharisees and scribes. Now, let's be fair to these folk. They were religious, devout and earnest about their religion. But they couldn't cope with a view of God which went beyond being utterly just. There were laws to be kept, and you either kept them and you didn't. So you were good or bad, you were acceptable or not. They had little room for shades of grey. But says Jesus, they are behaving like this elder brother. They have done nothing wrong. Note, he agrees that's the case. Their problem is that they want God to be as limited in his love as the older son wanted his father to be. And religion throughout history is littered with examples of people imposing on God their very human limitations. It comes from a very human pride and superiority, which is truly amazing. It ends up with the kind of statement made at an ecumenical discussion. Fine, you worship God your way, I'll worship him in his. Sadly, we can all feel that, not far below the surface, there's an element of the older brother in us. And woe betide the person who begins to point our limitations to us. Maybe you know Sidney Carter's song from whatever it was, 60 years ago, which had the chorus, "Now we're writing to the bishop to say that we are shocked. The vicar is a beatnik, he ought to be unfrocked." That is an almost perfect modern parallel to Jesus' story. Except that the things that they object to are nothing like as serious as the things Jesus did. At early morning service, he plays the mandolin. We'd never actually been there, but we know that it's a sin, so we're writing to the bishop. Jesus did far more than play a mandolin. By the way he treated people, by implication, he criticised the way they treated people. And they couldn't cope with that. He was smudging their nice, clean lines. His religion was disturbing to them because you couldn't be quite sure where you were. It's the same issue as with the story of the workers hired at different times of the day to pick the grapes and all getting the same wage at the end. God's love seems to contradict what they understand by justice. Our rules and regulations may not be as grotesque as some of the ones they had, but they produce the same effects sometimes. I can recall vividly uproar in an old folks' home I used to visit donkeys years ago. Several very devout old ladies used to come when I went in with Holy Communion once a month. But they were outraged when I was willing to give communion to someone they knew hadn't been confirmed. Or I think of a man I was very fond of in the parish where I served my curacy. He had an addiction problem which none of us knew about until it came to light that he'd embezzled all his wife's firm's holiday fund to finance his gambling habit. He went to prison. And out of that experience in the far country, to quote this parable, he came to his senses and came back to that church. By this time I'd left. Apparently he was a changed man. But I gather there were those who would not stay in the church with him. Either he goes or we do, was the message flying around. It was a tribute to that community's faith that they stuck by him and, as it were, killed the fatted calf. So older brothers can be around today. That's why Jesus told the story. That older brother is crucial to understanding it. But what do we actually remember most? Maybe it's different things for different people. But if I had to draw a picture of this story, like children in school are sometimes asked to after hearing a story read, it would not be of the younger son with the pigs or the older one sulking. It would probably be the father rushing out to meet the returning boy. The dominating picture is of the father, this man who loves and loves and loves, and who clearly was representing God in the story as Jesus tells it. God is like this man. And no doubt we can all think of parents who've gone on loving and loving when children have abused their love appallingly. Again, I think of an old lady who told me lovingly of her son and how successful he'd been and how kind he was to her. It was only after a while I realised he never came to see her or wrote or showed any kind of affection in any way, but she would not have a bad word said about him. Her love could not be broken. Such people do reflect the love of God, but it isn't always so. One man who had offended his father was advised to think of this story. Just go home, he'll kill the fatted calf, he was advised. A few days later he was asked, did he kill the fatted calf? No, said the man ruefully, but he nearly killed the prodigal son. The father in this story is the one Jesus is wanting those older brothers who are criticising him to know about. And in the way Jesus behaves with the people the older brothers reject, he is being a mirror of that father and his love. So let's look for a moment at what the father in the story does. First of all, he's generous. He divides all he has between his children. He takes risks in doing that. He knows that control has gone from him. His children can make a mess of things in whatever way they choose. And when the younger son goes off, he doesn't put him out of sight and out of mind. Clearly his eye on the road waiting for him to return. And no sooner does he appear on the horizon than the father is out on his way, ready to welcome him home. He doesn't allow him time to make all his carefully prepared speech of saying sorry. He's only halfway through that when he interrupts with the commands to get the best robe and a ring and shoes and to prepare a feast. What an amazing picture that is of God's love. Yes, he gives us freedom to make a mess of everything, and he's given us all that he has between us. So we could go through the entire tale and find echoes of what God does with us as individuals, with his people as a whole, as a community. And to the extent that we have encountered that free, giving, risking, forgiving, welcoming and rejoicing love of God, we will know that this tale is a good one because it rings true. Let me end by asking what we should call this story. Traditionally, it's been known as the parable of the prodigal son. But many scholars have challenged this. After all, there's no title in the Bible itself, so it's got no more authority than long tradition. But actually, it's no more about this son who went off than about the brother who stayed at home. So one Bible I have heads it, the brother's quarrel. But still more, it's about the father who stayed and loved and waited. Some modern Bibles have headed it, the loving father. But best of all in my book is a title a German professor of theology called Helmut Tiedeker gave it. He called it the waiting father. And that is what God is like. He's waiting for us all to come home to him. And when we do, he's waiting to get the feast ready and to rejoice. The younger boy had to go away to realise what he had at home. The older boy didn't yet seem to have grasped what love surrounded him. The father wants both to know and waits for them both to know what T.S. Eliot wrote about in Little Gidding. The end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time.